You are about to receive messages that may be harmful to your mental state. Your sense of reality will be questioned. Your view on things will be altered. You are now part of the meta. The meta controls everything. The meta determines what will and will not happen. You are watching the Meta Show.
Good afternoon, everybody, all you folks on the East Coast of the United States, as well as those of us like me who are currently sitting in the United Kingdom. Good evening. Welcome to the Meta Show. I'm Brisk Rubal, and I am joined, as always, by the Meta.
Hello, hello.
All right, gentlemen, for the first time in a long time, I am not at my desk at 4 p.m. Eastern on a Saturday. I happen to be here over in the United Kingdom in London for Eve London. We just wrapped up a day's worth of Eve fun with a lot of folks. I was rather surprised about the number of people that were here. And I think for my rant this week, I'm going to talk a little bit about Eve London, and then I'm going to go into something that happened at Eve London that I think I need to talk about because it's driving me crazy. First thing, Eve London was started today at around 1300 UTC, 1 o'clock, for those of us who were on the ground. And I felt like, having been to Eve Vegas multiple times, having been to Iceland, having seen the things that I've seen folks do around the world, London felt really, really big, but it also seemed like it was kind of the last gasp afterthought of the whole Eve circuit. Now, this is the last day of the last event of the Eve World Tour for 2019, and I understand that everybody's tired. I think the devs were tired. I know Streamfleet was tired. I saw Miss Moses and I saw Raiden, and between tearing their hair out, it was obvious to me that they were getting tired. So I think this was a good experiment. This has been a year for experiments for Eve. I think it was fun. It was an interesting time, but I think I'm looking forward to going back to one or two major events a year rather than like 32. It was kind of crazy. The other thing that I think I was mostly annoyed with in terms of London this time was I felt like there wasn't as big an amount of information that was provided. Eve Vegas had a keynote. We had multiple breakout sections with developers. There were a large number of devs here, and I got to see a lot of my friends. I got to see CCP Burger, CCP Orca was here, CCP Fozzy was here. Talked to him for a little while. CCP Dopamine, Convict, all the usual suspects were here. But because of the way that the format was set for London, we didn't get any breakout sessions. We didn't get any in the weeds type stuff. It was really just the opening ceremony and then an Ask Me Anything with a bunch of developers, many of whom weren't the ones making the decision. So they could simply say, well, that sounds like a great idea to me, but I can't do anything about it. And that kind of frustrated me. So we got a handful of real pieces of news out of Eve London that we'll talk about in a little bit. But the first question in the AMA drove me up the wall, because the first words out of this gentleman's mouth were, I'm a small gang PvPer and I'm annoyed about super cap umbrellas. Guys, it's 2019. Every major NullSec alliance in the game has a super cap umbrella. They have their own space that they want to protect. You want your content, you're a small gang PvPer, you're a roamer, you're a wormhole guy. You view Quirius, you view Delve, you view Fountain, you view Esoteria, all of these places where us NullSec guys live. This is your Tom Tiddler's field of coming in and finding lots of content whenever you feel like it. That's why you come here. We understand. But you know what? We don't want you here. Your content is a problem for us. You're taking away from us doing the things that we want to do, which includes going and fighting you somewhere else, or our miners doing their mining, or our super caps doing their ratting, whatever they're doing. Your content is your content, but it's not our content. So it drives me crazy to hear people complaining all the time that they're getting dropped on by big ships. Guess what? All of these NullSec alliances have big ships. They don't want you in their space. So what are they going to do? You come in, they're going to drop the hammer. That's the reality. That's welcome to Eve. That is Eve in 2019. If you're not prepared for that, if you don't expect that to happen, if you really can't believe that this is what's going to happen if you come to Delve, then you're crazy. So I really would just love to never hear the phrase, as a small gang PvPer, I'm concerned about the amount of super caps. And while we always get dropped on every time we go into somebody's space to screw with them, why is that okay? Guys, deal with it. Welcome to Eve. That's my rant for today. Mittens, it's on you.
Well, before we get to my rant, I wanted to sort of engage with you a little bit. First of all, a brief apology. We have just shifted to a completely Zoom-oriented show, which is like the super cool thing. And Skeptic Nerd Guy is like behind the scenes being a producer and like basically making all this happen. And a friend of mine on our production group just reached out to me and said, Mittens, is everything all right? Like you look really tense. Like is something going wrong? And because Zoom doesn't have a push to talk thing, and I'm sort of like manually muting and unmuting, I was trying to not sniffle or blow my nose because there's a sort of a snot situation happening there. But anyway, with that out of the way, with a bit of oversharing, I was kind of curious, Brisk. Like I feel you with the people, like it sounds like we hear the same old whining over and over again. At the same time, to be fair, you know, I have a position where I don't think that supercaps should be able to impact subcapitals without having subcapitals be there for support. But one of the things I wanted to zoom in on here was, how many people do you, like you said, it was a really like, well, it was like a packed event. Like how many people turned up to this thing, do you think?
I would say at least 700 or 800 people. It was a lot of folks there. And I'll be honest, wow. It felt bigger than Eve Vegas, but that might just simply be, and obviously I don't think there were as many people for London as there were in Vegas, but the room was full and it was a two-tiered room and we were all over the place. So I felt like it was very well attended. I will say the only other thing I'll say, and then I'll let you get back to your rant, Mittens, was Eve London smelled differently than Eve Vegas did, and not in a good way.
Do you mean literally or metaphorically?
Literally. So I have to say, I want to thank all of the folks that came to Vegas for using their showers, and I wish that some of the folks that came to London had used theirs.
Yeah, that's always a dodgy thing when you get a whole bunch of nerds together. You know, hopefully next year, I mean, it's tough for the guys at Streamfleet because they have been going to event after event after event and making this kind of thing happen. You know, it'll be nice to get back to FanFest appropriately. I'll be looking forward to going to Reykjavik and hanging out with all my Euro buddies next April. But, you know, it kind of rolls my eyes when I've been watching. You know, it is so much harder for everybody at CCP to do a whole bunch of little events spread out around the world. And then, you know, your staff are getting jet lagged because they're flying to London, they're flying to Vegas, they're flying to some random dude's house in Finland. It's just travel, 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 travel. And like, there's a tremendous amount of org debt that's associated with that. And one of the reasons why I kind of roll my eyes about this whole Eve World Tour thing is that basically, as far as I can tell, they fucked up by basically not securing Harpa as a venue for FanFest. And they had to come up with this excuse of, oh, we're going on the Eve World Tour and we're not doing FanFest. So we're just going to be constantly traveling all over the place. And you wonder why the developers and the streamers and everybody just looks fucking exhausted after a certain point. So, you know, that's one of those things where it's not easy to run an event. And I don't think that people really appreciate that. And CCP's management, I think, really sort of bit off more than they can chew to cover for the screw up with Harpa. But since I'm already ranting, I guess it's time for me to, I'm going to get here and get ready to do my thing here. So what I wanted to talk about today was sort of a dovetail on the discussion last week, where I went on a rant about R64s and passive moon mining. And one of the things that has cropped up that I've seen in a lot of discussions about what alliances and EVE should be doing, all these debates about supercap umbrellas and content and our, you know, hunters versus hunted, this, that, the other thing. Something that I think is lost in a lot of these debates is an understanding of why large groups of players, usually in the form of alliances, actually go to war. Like, why do they do it? And there's this sort of like this unexplained, unquestioned assumption that if you have alliances, they will just go to war. And that if it's not happening, it's the fault of the various alliance leaders or it's the fault of somebody in there. You know, why aren't wars happening? So I kind of wanted to dive into the idea of what is it that makes a group of a couple thousand people go to war in EVE Online and explore the motivations of that. The overarching thing about warfare in EVE is this. The more difficult it is to make war, and when I say making war, it can be just, you know, even in high sec people blowing each other up. Oh, it could be things like fighting over moons. It could be full-blown soft war. There's a whole host of different things that count as warfare. But in general, the harder it is to make war in terms of the gameplay itself not being fun, the amount of logistical overhead and man hours that essentially have to go into actually starting to have spaceships shoot lasers at each other, the harder it is to make war, the less emotional it becomes. So I think the assumption that people have, especially from an earlier era of warfare, where it was much easier to make war in a lot of ways, is that people will just get mad and they'll go to war. And when it's simple to go to war, like let's say you're fighting over something like a single point conflict driver, like an R64 back in the day, it was much easier to flip a table over and say, you know, Sword Dragon felt that like somebody made fun of his, or like DBRB hit on Sword Dragon's girlfriend and now people are mad and there's a space war. Or in the case of the Great War, somebody said something bad on somebody's forum signature and we're mad at Tetsujin. And so now we're going to war, flipping over a table. And you contrast that with today, you know, so back in the day it would be a lot more emotional because you could say, okay, I'm angry about something or I'm afraid of these other guys or somebody did something and we're butt blasted. And that butt blast was pretty easy to translate into spaceship violence, which is good. I think we all want more spaceship violence. The challenge that we have now, and I think that's something that has been lost, is that the more effort that it requires to actually make a war happen, the emotions become less of an issue because you have to go through these layers of sort of institutional bureaucracy and planning and effort and moving fuel caches and making sure that you have your dread caches like set up and like everything ready to go, such that the higher the barrier to warfare, the more it becomes almost a mathematical calculation of expected value. So one of the things that we have been dealing with here in the Imperium, and thankfully we have this wormhole stuff to play with, and we're going to be talking about that later, is that now that R64s aren't like a thing, and part of that fault is mine. Like I advocated strongly to get rid of the old R64 system. I said passive moon mining was bad. I was completely wrong about that. I'm not saying we need to necessarily go back to passive moon mining, but like I was partially responsible for saying farms and fields, and we need to not have passive income because it does bad things to the game in one area. And I didn't realize it would get so bad in terms of taking out a key conflict driver in another area of the game. So I'm not saying that this is, that there's no like blood on my hands when it comes to this. But we in the Imperium have been sitting around having meeting after meeting after meeting, week after week after week, going, okay, what are we going to do to entertain our guys? What are we going to do? Okay, well, we could go over here. We could go over here. We could do this. And it becomes these expected value calculations of what are we going to get out of it if we go over here? And the more of these areas that are unfun that you have to slog through to make warfare makes warfare less likely. Like, you know, contemplating Fazisov in general is a thing where we try to actively avoid it to make some magic happen. So essentially that's what I want to try to start communicating to people. Alliances fight, sometimes it's about emotion. The harder it is to fight, and the more boring the gameplay or the more of a slog the gameplay is, then it becomes less emotional and more mathematical. And basically, I hope that they are able to make changes to the game to make the actual process of going to war more fun, like it used to be, and less of the homework that you have to get through in order to get some spaceships blowing each other up. And that is my little rant there.
And a wonderful rant that it was. So let's go ahead. We've got a lot of news to cover this week. We've got in-game news. We've got real life news with CCP. But let me go ahead and thank everybody who has subbed. And then we will move into our top story. So Iceburns resubscribed for 60 months. That's pretty damn good. Sadis, 58 months. Sally Solomon for 40 months. Trigger Mechanism for 23. Hildifer for 57 months. Master Tacitus for 11. The Vault has resubscribed for 50 months. Victor Fell, 52 months. Tuzzy, 31 months. I happen to resubscribe for 20 months. I am the scrub of everybody apparently on here because you guys have all been here a long time, longer than me. And Artaway for 34 months. So thanks to everybody who has resubbed during this part of the show. And let's go ahead and hit it. Our top story of the week, the initiative. top story of the week is the initiative heads north. So for those of you who were not aware, which I think was a lot of people, because for some reason this did not get the kind of big Reddit announcement I expected it would have. Last week, around this time, as a matter of fact, the initiative set Dead Coalition temporary blue. At least right now they're blue. This would include all of Darkness. It would include Ranger Regiment, all of the folks in Deadco who are up north and Branch. This was a pretty significant step for Initiative. It's the first time that we have deployed in, I want to say, 7 or 8 months now, since the Tribute War that kind of fizzled out. This was the first time that we were able to go up north in a long time. And unlike our last deployment when we went to Hakkanen, I want to say a year ago, where we only brought subcaps to harass NCDOTS folks in MT and TACO. This time we brought the supercap fleet. So right now we have deployed to 5TAC-P in Branch. 5TAC-P provides a lot of range into both Tenal and into Branch. And I'm looking forward to hopefully getting some good fights with NCDOT. Now, take a wild guess what NCDOT did in response. I bet you can't guess what they did, Mittens.
I'm going to take a wild guess that involves a lot of whining on Reddit. And did they retreat or did they move their super caps into the mess too? Because I don't know. You tell me.
The first thing they did was, I assume, they bat-phoned PL, because all of a sudden, PL's suddenly moving north to Northern Venal. And they just happen to be getting closer and closer to jump range of where we are.
God forbid they went in their own directions. I mean, they couldn't ever possibly like have PL in one area and NC in the other, because the moment the going gets rough, of course, they all have to blob up together while accusing. I'm sure that they, what's coming next is that you guys are going to be being accused of being the dirty bombers and how it's all your fault.
Oh, absolutely. There's just too many of us in it, guys. They can't possibly be forced to fight us and Deadco at the same time. Despite the fact that the reason we call it Deadco is everybody thought they were Deadco a year ago, but now they're not. They're back and they're fighting pretty hard. The other thing that they did was, which is what we typically have seen from NCDOT whenever we move anywhere, is all of their Entosis guys decided to come to Fountain and set up like 50 timers over the last 2 days, hitting every iHub and TCU that they possibly could. And I feel bad for all of my INIT colleagues who happen to be home right now, because they're out on little fleets making sure that all of our IHOPs don't get blown up while I'm sitting in a hotel room in Westminster. So sorry, guys. Hope you're having fun out there. So what does this mean? I mean, essentially what I think this means is that for the first time in a couple of months, we're going to see, hopefully, some pretty solid NullSec Empire battling. You got INIT and Deadco on one side. You've got PanFam on the other. Largely, it's going to be NCDOT and PL. We're not sure who else is going to be moving north. I've heard rumors today at London that Winterco maybe wanted to move up and take territory in Tenal. We're not 100% sure about that yet, but hopefully we will hear some more from those folks. But it looks like the North is going to turn back into a brawl again, and I can't wait. And I'm hoping we get some good big fight, fat super cap Titan battles out of this, because we haven't had them in a long time.
Yeah, I have some questions about this, just to dig into this a little. Could you explain, do you know, like, what are they fighting over? Like, what is, are they just fighting for the sake of fighting? Do they want to clear out, like, one of these regions and install their own renters? What's the objective for each side of this conflict?
That's a good question. I think what we've seen over the last couple of months was NCDOT was using the North and PanFam were using the North as their kind of farming territory. And when they came down to fight us and when they started moving, getting pushed out and reconsolidating into Malpais and those areas, a lot of that territory kind of went fallow. And what ended up happening was Deadco and those guys moved into that territory. Now, when a lot of these guys were jumping down and helping out Fraternity and those folks in the fight against Test and the Imperium in the south, that area kind of turned into Darkness's playground. They went up and reffed a lot of those areas and started taking that over. And I think since the end of the war, since the end of the Fraternity, Winterco, Deadco has basically been doing whatever they wanted. But those guys have realized now they've got the ability to go north again. NCDOT and PanFam realize they can go north again. And I think they're trying to take that territory back, or at least they're trying to go up there and clear it out and stop Ted Coe and Ranger Regiment from doing what they've been doing. So I think part of this is going to be us look, at least in it, looking for good fights, looking for something to do with our super cap fleet besides, you know, responding to Rourke Wall getting hit by wormholers. But I also think that I think probably what this is going to be is going to turn the North into a little bit of an area where we're going to be fighting over. And hopefully that means that we're not going to be doing as much Entosis as we're going to be doing big fleet fights. And I think we're in a pretty good position for that.
Now, another question on this. NCDOT calls for help, gets Pandemic Legion involved, which is pretty standard issue in CNPL. And again, like, I have not been paying attention to this region of space, so I'm going to ask probably a whole bunch of really stupid questions that somebody in my position in theory should know the answer to. But I guess what I want to know is, have you seen, when we see PL, has Horde been active in that area as well, or has it primarily been just NC versus Dedco and then now PL coming in?
So far, as far as I can tell, we've largely been seeing NCDOT and PL. But anywhere these guys are, if there's content, you're going to start seeing the usual suspects showing up. And I would not be surprised at all if Horde doesn't move north. I think it's very, very good content. It's not that far from Geminate for them to get there. It's probably easier for them to get there than it was for us to get there from Fountain. So I expect that we will start seeing them in bigger numbers if they're not already up there now.
Interesting. Okay, cool. That's all I've got on that. It is nice to see, though, that there is something at least beginning to happen in NullSec. We know that Dedco, Sword Dragon, has been spending a lot of time investing in creating an Australian and Chinese time zone. And so do you think that the upcoming hypothetical changes to SOV defense, or not SOV defense, I should say, Citadel defense, something that we'll be talking about is how CCB is changing things at some point in the future where defenders of a Citadel will no longer be able to get to choose the day that they'll be doing the defense. Do you think that's going to make an impact on what you're seeing in the conflict of North?
I hope so. And I think one of the things that this conflict in the North is going to be interesting to take a look at is it covers every time zone. So INIT is a primary EU time zone alliance. So you're going to start seeing a lot of EU time zone activity. NCDOT and PL PL has a pretty solid EU time zone. NCDOT has a very solid US time zone. And INIT, the one area that INIT has a lot of trouble with is EU US time zone. We're still working on that. We're not as bad as we used to be, but we're not where we are in the EU. And then you've got Dedco having a massive AU Asia time zone advantage. And the question is going to be, what does PanFam do to nullify that advantage? Now, the obvious thing, I think, would be, you know, potentially they would call in fraternity and try to get folks that are in the same time zone that have large numbers to come up and help them. But I don't think that's happened yet. And maybe it won't. We don't know. I have been hearing rumors and rumblings that fraternity is kind of tired of always being seen as working with PanFam because they kind of are forced to. And they were forced to in the Southern War because we were on the other side helping test. So you go to the other side, whoever's not on your side. And you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Now, I'll be interested to see if they decide to go north, because that, I think, will put some pressure on Dedco in that time zone and kind of fill that gap. But this is going to be a war. If the war actually pans out and it turns pretty good, we have the potential of seeing 24-hour fighting in a lot of these places, which is something we haven't seen in a long time. So I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, one of the things about this that's going to be kind of curious from a when we discuss movements in EVE, we typically do, we've used PanFam as a block label, as a designation for so long. And one of the things that I think that we're seeing over the last year or so is we might need to change the label or use something else, because that assumption that FRT is going to come, the assumption that Horde will be there, all of these kind of things have changed when PL and NCDOT, but particularly PL, NCDOT is stronger than PL. PL has been sort of wasting away for some time now. And we ended up with this sort of interesting political scenario where, you know, Pandemic Horde in many ways was created as being a meat shield for Pandemic Legion, and Pandemic Legion was supposed to be in charge of them. But now Incedot is stronger and better than PL, and Horde is basically standing on their own and doing their own thing. So it's almost like, you know, FRT is over here, Horde is over there, and it just seems odd to refer to, you know, maybe all of PanFam will get together and it'll be just fine, and it'll be just like it was back in the day. I'm not, you know, no promises on this, but, you know, it's an actual question, and it didn't used to be a question as to whether you would see Horde and FRT follow PL in doing this. Now, we don't know. I guess we're going to find out. I think that about covers it as far as things involving the North. What are we doing next? Is it time for the NullSec Power Hour? Are we doing the NullSec Power Hour?
I think it is time for the NullSec Power Hour, and we have a lot of EVE related news to talk about in here.
Yes, we do. We only have one subscriber that we need to give a shout out to between that segment and the last one. Again, guys, we're trying to do these at the end of each segment so people do get the appreciation for throwing money at the screen and adding to my barge fund, I guess. So Lavzeg, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And let's go to the Power Hour. All right. Brisk, you know, this is so many of these things happened at EVE London. Like there's a bunch of announcements that are related there. Like a lot of times Brisk and I will try to like hand off at the start of each of these new segments, because again, this is our third time doing this new format of the show. So, you know, we're working out the kinks as we go along. Normally speaking, at the start of a segment, we would try to probably have one of us do the intro and the other one do the next one. But, you know, Brisk, you're in London. A lot of the news that we have here involves announcements that happened that you just saw like a couple hours ago. So I'm going to toss this over to you and take it away, man. What do we got?
Well, the first thing we have is we finally got confirmation that the next patch is going to drop on Tuesday of this week. And that one is going to include the Triglavian Dreadnought. It's going to include ACL bookmarks. And I think we're all kind of looking forward to that one finally hitting. So that's a good thing. And I was happy that they finally confirmed this is all happening Tuesday. So we will have that to test out. I know that the bookmarks change was on CC earlier in this week, but we weren't 100% sure if it was going to go live. But it looks like, based on what we heard today in London, that all of this stuff is going to be out on Tuesday. Now, the other thing that they spoke about, and this was one of the few pieces of real news, is we finally got to hear what the next Team Talos iteration is going to be. It's called Kicking Down Castles. So essentially what this was, and Rise did tease this on the meta show last week when he joined us, this is going to be the first real changes to our concerns about time zone tanking that we've seen since the creation of the Citadel system, essentially. So what they're going to be doing is, first of all, the day of the week setting for defenders is going away. As a defender, you're not going to be able to set what day of the week your structure comes out. That's a great thing, because that was one of the things that helped defenders to ensure that they would be able to form and that they could, you know, decide when and where they were going to pick their battles. So this at least provides them with some attackers with a little bit more flexibility than they had before. The other thing that they announced was that sovereignty was going to matter a little bit more again. Essentially, that any system that has ADMs over four, you are not going to be a hostile group will not be able to anchor a medium structure or larger in that space. Now that's great, because that stops the bad guys in these systems that have been, you know, ratted and mined up pretty considerably from being able to just wander in, drop a Fortizar, protect it, and then be able to stage out of that for good. So it's going to make it a little bit harder to move in on other folks' space, which I think is probably a good thing, at least in some ways. But it also creates a little bit of change to the meta that everybody's going to have to pay attention to.
I have a thing on this. I'm gonna interrupt you and jump on this. So this is really weird to me. Like, so first of all, I think it's a good thing. It was delightful to have CCP Rise on, along with CCB Larrikin last week, and discuss some of the things that we're going to do to shake things up. And, you know, time zone tanking, hopefully there will be more changes besides just the defender not being able to pick the day anymore. But this medium and below structure thing with ADM, I think it's really sort of out of nowhere. I hadn't seen, speaking as somebody who is in charge of a vast and very strong space empire, we on a regular basis in the Imperium have had people, we call it the Roach Motel strategy, which is where we do this offensively, people will do this to us. You come in and you drop a whole bunch of like Retaros and Athanors and Astrahus down, and then harassment citadels. And then the Empire has to sort of clean those up. And from a certain perspective, I don't really want this, right? You know, I'm not sure who was asking for this. I'm not sure if this was like a Sword Dragon thing or where this came from. But functionally, what this means, and again, this makes the Imperium much stronger. So what I'm saying here is a statement against our own interest. On the surface, is it means that it'll be even harder for people to drop smaller citadels. This is something that will actually make it harder for hunters and people like that. I mean, sure, you drop a citadel in a high ADM system, and that does mean it's going to take like a week for the damn thing to go online. But the fact that they won't even be able to do it at all means that it's going to be a lot easier for empires like the Imperium to project power wherever we want to, because as long as we make sure that we have battened down the hatches, like before you deploy on a campaign, you can say, okay, guys, well, we want to make sure we don't have to deal with the Roach Motel or an infestation while we're gone. So everybody rat in mind like crazy, let's get those ADMs up before we deploy. And now we don't have to worry about homeland defense or like, you know, citadels anywhere, because, you know, basically screw you, we're out. So I was really kind of, we were taken aback by this. So we were having a conversation about this in the directorate meeting just a couple hours ago. I mean, it's great from a power and order and defense perspective, but, we already kind of have power, order, and defense on lockdown, at least in the Imperium. I don't know. I'm looking this gift horse in the mouth. I'm not going to like go to, you know, I'm not going to die on a hill saying, oh God, don't do this. But it kind of like the Sino change, it struck me as something that I was just like, what, you know, where did this come from? You know, if you're running a proper empire with a proper organization, you should be able to deal with Roach Motels. And if you can't deal with Roach Motels, that implies that your empire has some serious org issues that hostiles, I think, should be able to exploit. So that's my little rant on this bit, and I'll hand things back over to you.
Well, just to make it clear, and I think you're absolutely right. I think we were all kind of taken aback by that, because it seems like an interesting change that I don't know if a lot of people were asking for. But keep in mind, and I think Noisy pointed out in the chat, medium structures, that's not just Fortizars, that's Astra Houses, it's Retarus, it's Tartars. I mean, it's all of these standard citadels that you're going to put up. So basically, the only way you're going to Roach Motel anything anymore is if you're just bringing a bunch of Retarus, and that's it. It has to be a small structure. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to put it in the system with ADM.
Tuzzy is saying here it's not Tartars and not Fortizars. So it's Fortizars can be dropped here. Sorry, guys, we're clarifying here in chat. Apparently, Billy Robert Katrick's in chat here has more information about this. But it's basically like, you know, the garbage little baby citadels and stuff like that. What I'm talking about Roach Motels myself. That was a strategy that we used a couple years ago in one of the tribute incursions where it didn't go anywhere because we didn't bring our super caps with us. And we ended up sort of having to fuck off with our heads hung low. But, you know, you go in and you just overwhelm the hostile coordination and logistics groups by having that. On the other hand, the counter argument I can see in favor of something like this is that there really isn't that much of an advantage to keeping your ADMs high currently, except for online time for citadels and the amount of time it takes for people to hack from a FozzySaw perspective. So maybe this is an advance in the sense that it actually does provide an incentive for people to engage in PvE gameplay, ratting and mining, to raise the ADMs and then providing a defensive benefit for that. So, yeah.
Well, guys, thank you for catching this, because I'll be honest, I was in the room and I was under the impression that it was mediums and higher. But if it's only mediums, that's not as big a deal as I thought it was going to be.
It's the basically like the garbage deep citadels that people are using for harassment and stuff. So, okay.
Good. The third thing that they announced as part of the kicking down castles was a faction warfare change that basically is going to restrict tethering on structures in faction warfare if you don't control if your faction does not control the system. So if you are aligned with say Amar and you have dropped a bunch of citadels and then it flips to Minmatar, then you're not going to be able to tether at your structures. That one, to me, that was a good change, but it doesn't go far enough. The thing that we have heard more than anything since the Citadel expansion was that was what was killing faction warfare, was that you no longer really gained something tangible by taking control of a system. Because before, if you took control of the system, you swapped out and everything flipped and you were locked out of those structures. So if you had stuff in those structures, you couldn't get into it. And that was what made it interesting. That was primarily one of the main reasons why folks would go and flip areas of space. And then not being able to do that anymore with citadels, because you could simply drop a structure and put all your stuff in there and you wouldn't have to worry about who controlled the outposts in that system. That was a big downfall towards making faction warfare the kind of ghostland that it is today. So I feel like this is a good change. It's a good start of the change. But in the end, we need this to go beyond just tether. It needs to be about more than just tether. It needs to be about those structures owned by a group that is aligned with a specific faction. You should get locked out of those too. And I'm hoping that this is an incremental step to getting to that point down the road, because I think that'll be a big major change for faction warfare if they can get that done.
There is one clarification here, and part of the reason why Brisk and I were suffering some degree of confusion is that the terminology on the citadels, moving back to the discussion of citadels here briefly, is like classic CCB, right? We're sitting here going like, okay, medium citadels. When we think medium, we're thinking, you know, keep stars are the big ones, fortizars are the medium ones, and the small crappy ones that you use for harassments and roach motels are, you know, astros and retires and shit like that, right? But as it happens, there is no such thing as a small citadel. So in reality, the medium class are the smallest in terms of the formal language of citadels. And in informal terms, we think the big ones are keeps, the medium ones are the fortizars, and you know, the small ones are the, you know, the things that are actually in the game medium. So yeah. Anyway, just wanted to throw that out there because, dude, what the fuck?
I know, right?
All right. So what else do we have?
So the other major thing, and I was really, really pleased to see this. This was kind of the last thing that they talked about before they went into the Ask Me Anything, where I was getting triggered by small gang PvPers, was they have finally made a major policy change. Previous to this, and going back in the history, and Mittens, you remember this as well as I do. You were there when all this went down. One of the reasons why the Council of Stellar Management, the CSM, was created was because of the T20 incident. T20 was a developer for CCP.
Where's my Saber BPO?
Exactly. Who was a player, and he was, I believe, with PL. And he had been...
PL didn't exist. Well, I guess they did exist at the time, but he was a capital... yeah, so he was... this was back in the battle days of the Great War.
Going, was the Bob guy?
Yeah, so Kogutsuman, okay, right. Anthony Zabrowski.
Sorry, headliner, I don't mean to throw you guys under the bus.
Kogutsuman got into the Band of Brothers forums. He had been working for Lacca Volterra. Lalante had hired him director in Shinra, who ended up in Bob after we crushed Lacca Volterra into dust. Always pay your spies. He failed to pay Kogutsuman, and Kogutsuman flipped. Went over, got the Bob forums, and lo and behold, it turned out that there was a CCB developer who was a capital level director running cap fleets for Band of Brothers. His CCB name was T20, and it had happened that he had also helped by basically spawning items, including a fucking Saber BPO, like the best interdictor in the game, and gave it to his dear friends in Band of Brothers. Needless to say, this was somewhat controversial. And really helped add to the Bobber Bunch of Cheaters, Dev Hacks, Purge Burn Kill aspect of the Great War. But as a result, now that the story time is over, you're right, this was one of the main impetuses that brought CCB to the table and creating, there's all the stuff about democracy and leading the way with the player base and just a whole bunch of like herf blurf stuff surrounding the CSM now, because they don't really like to talk about the fact that the CSM actually was created because the player base was so outraged about the fact that they caught a dev cheating and intervening in NullSec politics. So that is why we ended up with the CSM.
And in addition to the CSM, one of the other things that CCP developed was a policy that basically stated that if you are a player, if you are a CCP developer, you can play the game, but you can't be in any NullSec superpower. You can't be an alliance director. You can't be involved in any NullSec politics, and you have to be completely anonymous. So to the extent that if you are caught, if somebody hears your voice and thinks, oh, that sounds like CCP X, are you a dev? If you get outed, then you instantly basically have to biomass that character and start from scratch and go somewhere else. That you could not play the game the way that we all play the game as part of the community if anybody discovered essentially that you were a CCP dev. So that was a problem because it was a deterrent to them actually playing the game. One of the things we said on CSM 13, our top three things that we announced at the first summit that we wanted to get CCP to focus on was the developers need to play the game, and they need to play the game across all areas of space, including in NullSec, because they're making major changes to the meta in the game, but they don't play it. So they don't understand how it's going to impact the game or how the changes that they're making are going to have downstream impacts that they're just not aware of because they're not involved in that gameplay. So you saw a lot of developers were small gang PvPers. They were wormholers. They were places where you could go and get away and not have to worry about somebody figuring out who you were. But in the large empire side of the game, these guys never had any experience. So finally, after us pushing for years and years and years, and I think they finally realized that they've gained enough trust back from the community after the T20 incident. Most players don't even remember that stuff. It's only old guys like Mittens and me that even remember that this stuff happened. But they can finally let these guys play the game and not worry about whether they get caught or somebody recognizes, oh, that's Rise's voice in this chat. Oh, I guess CCP Rise must be on this fleet with me. Oh, my goodness. So what they essentially are allowing is developers can play the game now. They're not being required to be private. If they want to join major alliances, they're free to do that. They can't be CEOs of corps. They can't be alliance directors or XOs. They're not allowed to scam anybody, they can't cheat anybody, and they can't do any large-scale market trading that could rise to the level of potential insider trading. But everything else they can do, they can. So if you guys want, go out there and start recruiting all your CCP developers. I know I'm going to be bugging Rise to join SDK in about 5 minutes, and I know a lot of you guys are going to go out there, and hopefully you're going to find that you've had devs in your alliances, and you just didn't know it all this time. But now they can come out of the closet.
I think it's a good thing. Like, things have changed. One of the reasons why it wasn't necessary to have developers playing the game at the era of T20, like, you want them to play the game, you want them to understand the game, but that crew at the time, the early days of CCP, they knew the game intimately. And what's happened over the last decade or so is you end up with developers coming in from outside companies, people who never really like played EVE before, and there was this brain drain essentially, where a lot of the old school guys who made EVE in the early days ended up at like Riot or Ubisoft Montreal or what have you, or Rockstar. And things are different now. We just, you know, I used to be very violently opposed to the idea of developers having anything to do with NullSec warfare, because back in the day it was a huge problem. But now the greater problem is a lack of understanding and a lack of knowledge of how the game actually works and how NullSec actually works. So I'm not too worried about a Saber BPO. And CCB, of course, has buffed up their internal affairs department over the years in reaction to the T20 thing. So it's just not as much of a concern as it used to be. So, you know, you don't want to try to out developers. The big issue here is this. I don't think we're going to see CCP Rise flying on CCP Rise, whatever. It's just going to be a random ass character. But the important thing now is that devs are going to feel free to have their random ass unknown characters in a NullSec alliance, because if somebody does recognize their voice, they aren't going to lose the character and have it vanish and all the investment that they put into it the instant that they get outed. I think this is a positive thing all the way around. I'm delighted that they did it.
Absolutely. I mean, especially for devs that were players before. So we could potentially see Kill 2 back in fleets. We could see Dark Razor back in fleets. We could see Bam Stoker back in fleets. You know, it'd be kind of cool to see these guys playing on the tunes that they had before they, I said tunes, I'm sorry guys. I'm old school Star Wars Galaxies is what we called them. That they can get on their characters and actually play the game, you know, the way that they did before they became developers. So I'm looking forward to seeing those guys in space. It's going to be fun. So I think that was probably one of the better changes that I've heard today in London. I was very happy to hear that.
All right. Well, we have a big patch coming up on Tuesday too. So we have, I'm going to go through this here because Brisk has been kind enough to take us so far. We have Invasion Chapter 2, which means that the Trig Dreadnought and its skills are going to be added to the game. The devlog seems to indicate that new players will have to decide if they want to fight the Trigs or betray the Empires and help the Trigs. So there should be some degree of potential fuckery to be had there. I'm not sure how that's going to go down. Should be interesting. We have Trig damage implants being added to the LP stores, which apparently is going to make Brisk and Merkelchen both very happy. I have no idea. Is that your thing? Okay.
Oh, yes. Anything to increase my damage output on a structure bash, it's a good thing.
And some changes here with Minmatar ships in general, the Rapid Fire Team Talison update. We don't know too much about what's going to happen. I mean, hopefully we kind of want to get away from just a Munin and Eagle meta. But we do know that there's going to be a buff to medium autocannons, damage bonuses for the Stabber Fleet issue and Tempest Fleet issue. And I'm sort of like jumping ahead to the bit that I'm excited about because I'm selfish like that. But Alliance bookmarks, finally. Finally, after all of these years, Alliance fucking bookmarks. Jesus Christ. Yeah, so that's a big deal. There's a whole dev blog about that, and it's coming in next week on Tuesday. And that is, you know, I'm not going to get into the weeds about all the nuances of how they're implementing that. I do need to stop getting the weeds because we need to go to cool kids only mode here in a moment. But the fact that you're going to be able to use an ACL system for bookmarks means that it is possible for entities that are not purely in one corp to easily go into and share bookmarks in wormhole space. So it's gonna be pretty crazy. One thing I want to make clear, we've talked about possibly going into wormhole space before on the meta show, and we scared the living Jesus out of the wormhole society, basically. So I think you are going to see a lot of Nullsec Empires start messing around in wormhole space, but nobody wants to kill the golden goose. Like, there's sort of an understanding here that, like, we're bored of Savor. Something, you know, obviously there's things that are happening in the Northwest, and that's great. But I think that, you know, the exploration and the incursions of Nullsec Empires into wormhole space is primarily going to be novelty seeking and entertainment because, you know, we, at the end of the day, we really do just want to mash, you know, 50 or 100 spaceships together and figure that out. So you're not going to see like a violent purge of wormhole space or some sort of like coalition level devastation. You know, if somebody pisses us off, of course, that's a different matter. But as usual, the rule of best possible friend, worst possible enemy applies. Before we move to the next thing, I need to get us into cool kids mode if we haven't done that already. Sorry, I'm messing with this over here. There we go. So yeah, we are in subs only mode. We do this at the 45 minute mark, unless Mittens runs his mouth too much and runs a little bit over the 45 minute mark. So if you guys happen to have any questions or things for us, we will try to take questions. This is a perk that we give to our subscribers to for supporting the channel, or you can just talk shit amongst yourselves, you know, whatever floats your boat. What else do we have? We have some things involving Vegas 2020. So this is actually a really big deal. We as a community want to keep partying in Vegas, right? I know that CCB is saying that they're doing a thing in San Diego next year, but the players got together in Vegas this year and decided, you know, we're gonna make this happen as a community regardless. And the reason we're talking about this now is that the group that is going to be managing and creating the player-run eVegas 2020 has posted a Reddit thread about it, which I am linking here in chat. And they also have a Twitter account. And you'll be hearing about this a lot over the coming year because we want people to be plugged in on this, get the news, get the updates, follow that Twitter account so people know what's up so we can continue to party like we have for the last however many years without interruption. And one last thing, We're about to go to our favorite new segment, which is the Piercing the Corporate Veil. But before we get there, a little bit of shout outs. We have a Scoopy for an entire year, 1 year mark. That's awesome. Or Scope. I don't know if I should say Scope or Scoopy. Looney Fucker and Who's Stone Moonkin for 2 months. So thank you guys very much. And let's go to the next phase. All right, what do we got here today, Risk?
So we have two things right now to talk about in terms of piercing the corporate veil. The first thing is, and we're still waiting on the data from this, but today was supposed to be the third attempt by Eve Aetherwars, Hadion, and the crew that are trying to build the next new engine for MMOs to allow for large numbers of players on a single shard. They were doing their mass test again today. They were trying to break Eve's record from Nitech P of the most players online engaged in a single battle in an MMO game. The odd thing about this, and folks are asking, how did it go? I wish I could tell you, but I'm in Eve London because they did it at the same time as Eve London. When you've got 700 or 800 of your most hardcore EU nerds sitting in an auditorium not playing the game. And it was funny that they brought this up during the London opening ceremony. And I guess they were talking to the folks at home. And I don't know how many you guys actually showed up. But, you know, for me, I couldn't do it. I've done the last two. I wanted to do the last two. But sorry, guys, you picked the one day in November when everybody is going to be doing something else. So that kind of annoyed me that they were doing that. But I'll be honest, and I don't know about you, Mittens, but this is my personal take on this. I will be happy if they don't break the record, because this is bullshit. You know, I love Hadion. I think they're a good company. I think they're doing a lot of crazy, cool stuff that potentially could have an impact on Eve in the future, especially, you know, anything that's going to make the servers work better so we can have these big fights without tie-dye and without, you know, constant lag and disconnects. That's great. But it's a gimmick. You guys are testing an engine. Trying to say that you're going to win the Guinness Book of World Records record away from actual Eve for this, you know, testing of your back end stuff. Guys, that sucks. That's bullshit. That's not real. It's a test. I understand what you're doing. I understand you want the hype, but for me, I was in Nitech P. A lot of my friends were in Nitech P. I have a picture. My son brings home the Guinness Book of Gamers World Records, and I flip to the back, and there's Eve. And there's a picture of CCP Guard and CCP Falcon smiling, holding up this big thing, saying they want it. And I can tell my kid, I was there. I was in the battle. At least one of my accounts was online. The other two were stuck trying to reconnect. But you know what? I had at least one dread in that fight. That's cool. What am I supposed to say if they break this today? Oh, well, I was in London, so I didn't get to join the test. Sorry.
This is, you know, there's something weird about this. And from like a, since we are in Piercing the Corporate Veil, that means we're going to go like business meta game here. Because, you know, this isn't CCP. This is an outside company. It's like Hadion or something like that. Am I right?
Hadion, yeah.
So who are these guys? And that's a rhetorical question. But the reason I'm asking this is at every time that they have had an opportunity to try, like they're sort of promoting this, I'm not sure whether it's a favor for like an investor buddy or a friend of Hilmar's or something like that. But like, you know, if you actually want to do a mass test, like a real one, the way that you get players to do something is you talk to the large organizations that on a regular basis manage tens of thousands of people and get them to show up. Because lo and behold, I mean, this is shocking news, guys, but it takes a shitload of work and coordination to get thousands of people to turn up at a time and a date certain for a purpose, right? And as far as I can tell, there hasn't been any like outreach to the great empires that would actually put asses in chairs. There's no obvious affiliation between CCP and this company. And I think the fact that, you know, it strikes me as like one of those doing a favor for a businessman buddy, like C-suite, you know, you're drinking beer with some other entrepreneur and they're like, hey, we're going to do this thing. Can you help? And you're like, sure, whatever. And the reason why it feels sure, whatever, is exactly the London thing you just pointed out. Like there have been a couple of these things now where it's like, okay, well, we'll send our players and we'll post it on our website and we'll see if people turned up. And like, okay, you got 1,700 people. Like 1,700 people is fucking nothing. And the fact that these events keep happening simultaneously with CCP planned events that would inherently take some of the more committed parts of the player base away from an opportunity to do the mass test. It's just, there is a piece that is missing from a business or a corporate perspective that would explain why the hell this keeps happening in kind of a half-ass way, right? It's like, oh yeah, I'll totally go to your party. I'll tell my friends that you're throwing a birthday party. Oh, well, none of them showed up. Or I guess a couple of people showed up and like, oh, well, better look next time. So yeah, I don't get it. There's something weird about it. I don't have like a super strong opinion about it, but it does seem like there is kind of like a weird missing piece from a business perspective to explain the relationship between CCP and this company and the fact that these these events keep happening without really like a full degree of what I'd call support. So I have no idea, but it is weird. I think we can all agree that it's a little weird.
And I think what we're seeing probably is just another example of the same problem that we see sometimes internally with CCP, where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. I think this was the day that worked for them, and it just happened to coincide with the last big Eve meet of the year, where everybody from CCP and you know, almost all of the people in Britain that play the game are like in one place.
Right.
So I think that was interesting. I would assume, and they've been bringing in new partners every time. So this time, in addition to Hadion, they also had Microsoft Azure. They had Steam involved to make it a little easier to download the client and to do the things that they need to do to get the game out into people's hands. So I think, obviously, to me, there's something going on, some relationship here, and hopefully it bears fruit, because the amount of effort and the fact that CCP has been willing to promote this stuff, promote these tests, use their bully pulpit to get their players to come out and help these guys for free, essentially, that's kind of something I'd like to see succeed. And I'm hoping that it works out. But I wish they would stop with the whole, let's try to break the Guinness World Record gimmick thing, because that's our record. If they want their engine to work, that's great. If they want to help us break the record in EVE with the next time, then that's fine. But, you know, let's cut it.
Yeah. Like, you know, the other thing that's something that Skeptic points out here in chat that's quite accurate is an example of, you know, Amazon Game Studios reach out to the Imperium leadership because they wanted us to help mass test, you know, one of their upcoming titles. And we shoved a ton of people into that game, and we had a whole huge pile of fights and hilarity and a lot of fun with it. And you know, that's an example of something where like the communication and the messaging all line up, and there's a purpose to it, and that's how you get a lot of people to do things. But yeah, you know, it's just sort of like, I understand where you're coming from, that you're saying that CCP is like helping Hadion with this by like going through the effort of like posting this stuff and using their bully pulpit. I don't think they're really using the bully pulpit, because it seems like, you know, posting a devlog and saying, yeah, guys, show up, but not really like committing to like do the effort. Regardless, we'll see where it goes. We are running a little bit late, so I want to move on to basically the final issue of the day, which I think is critically important for EVE Online and very good news. It's nice to actually have good news. We've got the wormhole stuff coming in. That's good news. We have Team Talos changes. That's good news. And we found out today that right now, as we speak, the number three country in terms of EVE Online population playing this game right now, it's US number one, Russia number two, Korea number three. I am delighted by the fact that it seems like the Korean localization, the marketing push, that is actually taking root. If you look at JITA, it's full of Koreans. If you look at the chart of people playing the game on EVE Offline, you can see a Korean time zone. And I think it's just, you know, we are so used to seeing, you know, you got to try a lot of things. You try stuff. Here's a new initiative. We're going to do this. It doesn't necessarily work. It is so nice to see that the Korean launch has gone well, and that we are in fact getting a shitload of new Korean players. And goddamn, it's nice. It is the birth of a new time zone, which is something that happens very rarely in the history of EVE Online. We have had Korean players before, but not in large enough numbers to actually merit their own strategic time zone, which is important. Not just, hey, we've got lots of people playing the game, but when you have a large enough group of people to defend territory in a particular time zone, then that just shakes up the meta of block level gameplay massively. So congratulations to CCB, congratulations to the Korean player base, and welcome the fuck aboard.
I agree 100%. I think the only thing that I would add to this is that I think for a lot of people, they were very nervous. We were very nervous when Pearl Abyss bought the company last year. And I think so far, everything I've seen has demonstrated that this has been a shot in the arm for EVE Online and for CCP. So the fact that we were able to get this done, and then Pearl Abyss is a Korean company, they were partners in making sure that the localization happened. And then they helped to promote it and go into G-Star, which was where they announced a ton of new games for their own existing IPs, as well as talking about EVE and EVE Echoes. It's huge. It's huge for us. And I think anybody that had any concerns or questions about PA coming in and sticking their fingers in the game, so far everything that they have done has been beneficial and helpful. So I'm very happy about that. And I think that's all the time that we have.
Yeah, I think that's it. We're actually on time and on target. So thank you all for coming, guys. And looks like we've covered everybody in terms of subs at the very end. Thank you to our cool kids. And we will be here next weekend on time and on target. So yeah, that's it. That's the show.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And you stay classy, New Eden.